Hi, everybody. Dave Lefkowitz here, the host of Dave's Gone By, and we're about to listen to an episode of the show that aired on WGBB back on January 12th, 2003. It was our 15th episode, and it's very cool. It has a fun comedy sketch and a lot of good music in it. The only problem is part of that original show, the opening, I would say, 10 to 12 minutes, was cut off. It never got properly recorded, so it's, alas, lost forever. But the good news is that I have the transcript of my opening monologue, and then that went into some music. So what I'm doing is re-recording the opening bit, and then the whole rest of the show was saved, and we're going to hear that, with a couple of little clips here and there in the music, just because we're trying to fit this show, which was 90 minutes on the air, onto an 80-minute CD. But otherwise, you know, please sit back, enjoy. Hope you like this episode of Dave's Gone By.
The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dave's Gone By, an hour of talk radio, comedy, music, and whatnot, coming to you live from fresh and funky Merrick, Long Island, with 40 acres and a nautical mule. If you've just been listening to Teen America, don't flip the dial so quick. You might just like what we do here. And we had been doing it from 8 to 9. Actually, originally we were doing it from 11 to midnight, but the only people listening at that hour were psychotic taxi drivers and child molesters. And while I don't want to lose them as a core audience, I do want to build on that strength and expand the Dave's Gone By listenership. Hence, the move to 7:30. We still play till 9, so keep it at 1240 WGBB for music, comedy, commentary, culture, and all sorts of other good things. This is our 15th show, to be young, gifted, and Dave. I'm Dave, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, playwright, theater critic, and champion of the nervous bourgeoisie. And my show is really a hodgepodge of funny stuff, serious things, and music. You have to listen to the whole thing to really get a sense of it. And hey, if it wasn't for me, they'd be playing an infomercial about colon cleansing right now, so count your blessings. And speaking of colon cleansing, please be advised that although the show is pretty tame as far as FCC guidelines and community standards and all that, it isn't a show for kids. So if your little ones are listening and they hear something you don't think they ought to, just give them a hard whack in the back of the head. Just one. You can use a belt. And by the time their ears stop ringing, they'll have forgotten whatever it is they heard. It's a great system, better than my old one, where I just told parents not to let kids listen because they might hear some weird stuff. That only narrowed my potential audience, and it froze the kids out of segments of the show that were not only harmless, but possibly educational or inspiring. So let's start going with the one-whack route. A single smack to the back of the head. Two, if your kid is listening with headphones. Just a light tap with a newspaper if your child has ADHD. And remember, you have to wait for me to say something naughty before you hit them. There's no fair hitting them repeatedly throughout the show, just on the assumption that the next thing they hear will be offensive. So let's try that out, shall we? I'll give you an audio cue. Get your fists and palms and slippers ready. Okay, here we go. Well, gee, I had an interesting week. My wife and I had our dog neutered. We have two dachshunds, a short red-haired who was fixed a couple of months ago, and now our second, a wire-haired doxy, who had his nuts hacked off on Friday. Okay, were you ready for it? Now, I hope you didn't jump the gun on the neutered line, because your kids would have recovered by the time I mentioned the nuts being chopped off. So, Let's try that one more time. I'm sure most of you have it now, so wait for the whack words and then bang away. Here goes. So, we've been watching our dog 24/7 since the operation. He's doing great. Thank you, Dr. Zimitz of Oceanside Vet Hospital. Wonderful job. Although, alas, she's moving her practice to Mineola. Thank you also to Karen and the folks at the front desk. Always a pleasure. Anyway, our older dog, Murray, had crypt orchid syndrome. That's where one testicle was undescended. It's a congenital thing, not to mention a genital thing. So that was more a complicated procedure and required more recuperation time. It was closer to female spaying than male neutering because the operation was invasive to go in and get that nut. No, not yet. With our second dog, Oofty Goofed, I mean, his were hanging down for the world to see. So on Friday, I think it took one stitch. Snip. He was done. He has a neck brace, so he can't reach around and lick or bite at the wound. But otherwise, knock wood, he's coming through like a champ. We took him home the same day. He was already wanting to run around, play fetch, and he had no ill will whatsoever. He was glad to see us, he was licking our faces, cuddling. Dogs are so forgiving. I mean, if you figure 10 months is about age 6 in dog years, if I were 6 years old and you brought me to the doctor, and I woke up 3 hours later, looked down, and realized someone made off with my family jewels, I wouldn't be wagging my tail and licking my parents' faces. They would have to hide the cutlery, because otherwise, in the morning, you would find Daddy's schlong and Mom's ovaries in the mixmaster. You know what I'm saying? Okay, I hear hands whacking heads all over Long Island. No, not those heads. Very good. There's some really concerned parenting going on. Anyway, that's just a taste of what lies ahead for the next 85 minutes of this show. Not all of it so raunchy or violent. In fact, this episode is partially dedicated to a patron saint of non-violence, Dr. Martin Luther King, whose birthday is January 15th, even though it's celebrated next Monday. More on that anon. So, to remember Dr. King, we have some cool segments, including Dave's Gone Cultural, with a look at modern black poetry, and a special segment, an interview conducted by another host at WGBB, Joe Salzone. He has a political talk show here Saturday nights at 7:30, and Joe was kind enough to let me air an interview he did with a very interesting black lady, Cleola Bevers, who claims to have been one of Martin Luther King's closest friends, and something more. So definitely stick around for that. Plus, we're going to tear this place up with some wicked music. Everything from James Brown to Public Enemy, Richie Havens to U2, Shuby Taylor to Screamin' Jay Hawkins. All on Dave's Gone By. And we'll get to the news Gone By in a few minutes. But before I forget, we have a ticket giveaway. Last week, we gave away a couple of tickets to a concert next Sunday night. Yeah, instead of hearing my show, a few listeners will be sitting in Forest Hills Jewish Center. Now don't laugh, that's an up-and-coming music venue. Forest Hills Jewish Center on Queens Boulevard. They'll be seeing and hearing the Klezmer Conservatory Band. Now they're one of the country's leading klezmer ensembles, led by Hankus Netzky, with an 11-piece orchestra, and they were at the forefront of the klezmer revival movement in the 1980s. They have about a dozen albums out, mostly on the Vanguard and Rounder Records labels, and they've been on Prairie Home Companion, they've recorded with Itzhak Perlman, and the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, and they backed Joel Grey in his Yiddish musical review, Borscht Capades, 94. So, yes, there was a kitsch factor in their past, but musically, they are the real deal. And the band was kind enough to give us some free tickets last week, which we offered on the show, and then two more pair that we offered on the Dave's Gone By website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Well, the Klezmer Conservatory Band is being even more generous because they've given us three more pair of tickets. I think they're worth something like $45 a piece, no joke, and we are giving them away tonight. And each pair will go to the first three people who call into the show and say the secret word, Mushnick. Now, the concert is Sunday night, January 19th at 8 p.m. The tickets will be reserved in your name at the box office window. You just have to show some ID and be there at least 15 minutes before the 8 o'clock curtain. So, call the station at 516-955-1240. That's area code 516-955-1240. Say the secret word, Mushnick, and you can win two tickets to the Klezmer Conservatory Band at Forest Hills Jewish Center, January 19th. We have three pair we can give away tonight, so if the line is busy, keep calling in till the end of the show. And you don't have to go on the air. The engineer will take your name, email address, and phone number and give you all the info. You must be 15 years of age or older, no direct family members of me or anyone at GBB, but friends, neighbors, distant relatives, no problem, free tickets. So call and say the secret word, Mushnick, 955-1240 for Klezmer in Forest Hills next Sunday. Coming up in a few minutes is the news gone by, but first, I want to give a plug to Don Lewis. He's also got a new time slot. His music and talk show is called Entertainment Long Island. It had been on late Sunday nights, but now you can hear Entertainment Long Island Saturday nights, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. It's an old-fashioned program in the best sense of the word. Lighthearted chat about what it takes to be a performer. And he has guests on from the entertainment field. I think Steve Guttenberg was on recently, jazz musician Vince Giordano, and live music every week from Eddie Hug and the Moonshiners. So, check out Don Lewis and Entertainment Long Island, 5:30 to 6:30 Saturday nights on WGBB. But right now on GBB, me, playing music for MLK, here's Richie Havens.
Clap your hands, 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 yeah, clap your hands.
Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret. These are magical words conjuring up a universe of great entertainment. If you want to know everything about what's happening on the stages of New York, you need to get Performing Arts Insider magazine. For 60 years, Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the industry. It tells you when shows are opening and closing, what they're about, who's in it, designers, writers, composers, contacts for producers and managers, box office info, parental guides, everything you need to know if you care about theater, opera, and dance too. As the chief editor of Backstage put it, Performing Arts Insider is who, what, where, and when, all the facts at your fingertips. For more information, how to subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's time for the news gone by, a look at shizzles of the past week from a nizzle perspective. On the terrorism front, police in Britain have arrested seven men in connection with a plot involving the poison ricin. The men were allegedly going to inject poison into their victims or smear it on doorknobs and spread it that way. All of the arrested men were from Algeria, which makes sense because if they'd grown up in or around Britain, they'd know that you don't need ricin to poison people. Just plain old English cooking has been doing it for years. In Israel, something to to distract Prime Minister Ariel Sharon from fighting terrorism and rebuilding his coalition government, a Justice Ministry document leaked to the press indicates that police are investigating Sharon and his sons. It's in connection with a $1.5 million loan from a South African businessman. Israeli law prohibits campaign funding from abroad. According to Reuters, the loan allegedly covers payback of illegal campaign funds from a previous election. When Sharon went on television to refute the charges, Israel's three TV stations cut him off in the middle. To their mind, he was getting free airtime for what was turning into a campaign speech. So, what did the viewers miss? Well, Sharon remains a savvy politician, and he adapts rhetoric from other government leaders. For example, responding to the corruption charges, Sharon said, "I welcome this kind of examination because the people have to know whether their president is a crook. Well, I am not a crook. A shyster maybe, but not a crook." Sharon went on to call the charges against him ridiculous. He said, quote, "Why would I, a Jew, pay $1.5 million for an election? Wouldn't I have shopped around and gotten it wholesale?" In national news, Illinois Governor George Ryan commuted the sentences of 156 death row inmates. Instead of getting the chair, these inmates will either get life imprisonment or, in some cases, shorter sentences and potential release. Ryan had stopped executions in the state 3 years ago because, according to the courts, of the 25 people executed in Illinois since 1977, 13 of them were wrongly convicted. 13 of 25. That's a number to give anybody pause, especially Governor Ryan, who said that capital punishment under Illinois law is, quote, arbitrary and capricious and haunted by the demon of error. When asked if granting blanket clemency to every single criminal on death row is just, Ryan, who leaves office next week, says he's made another ruling to be even more even-handed. Every murder victim killed by someone on death row will be free to rise up from the grave and go back to living his or her normal life. I think that sounds pretty reasonable. From the New England Journal of Medicine comes news that contradicts some of the former opinions about alcohol consumption. According to a study at Beth Israel Medical Center in Boston, people who consume a few drinks, 3 or 4 times a week, are 37% less likely to have a heart attack. Extrapolating from that, the study added that celebrities Diana Ross and Nick Nolte will both live to be 187. But seriously, the folks who did the study do not recommend excessive drinking or even beginning to drink moderately if you don't drink at all. All they studied was alcohol's effect on the heart and not what it does to the brain, the liver, the tissues, etc. The theory is that ethanol in alcohol increases HDL, the so-called good cholesterol that helps platelets. The Boston scientists also noted that the key to the positive results of their study wasn't so much the amount of alcohol intake as how often it was consumed. In other words, those who drank just a little bit a few times a week got just the same heart benefit as those who consumed more. Or, as my mother would say, and has said for years and years, everything in moderation, except pork and shrimp and lobster and highways and air travel and premarital sex and, all right, scratch that, but you get the point. And here's another strange health finding reported in Newsday. A substance found in the saliva of vampire bats has an anti-clotting agent that may help in the treatment of strokes. What the study neglected to point out was that high among the leading cause of strokes is coming into contact with vampire bats in the first place. Now, I know it's early in 2003, but I think we may have found our News Gone By Idiot of the Year. This from the Daily News. A wedding celebration in Kabul, Afghanistan, turned deadly when guests fired a rocket-propelled grenade into the air. The grenade shot up into the sky, but it did not burst. It merely fell back to the ground intact near the partygoers. Until one genius checked to see why the grenade didn't go off. He nudged it with his foot. Yeah, you know where this is going. And surprise! It exploded, killing 5 people and wounding many others. Now, we've seen on the TV news that to express joy at marches, celebrations, and, I guess, weddings in the Middle East, they very often fire guns into the air. It's not traditional for Arab celebrants to use bombs and explosives, unless they're hurling them at a Jewish wedding nearby. I should mention that the explosion in Kabul delayed the wedding party, but didn't bring the festivities to a complete halt. In fact, the best man even put a garter around the bride's thigh. The gross part was that the bride and her thigh were in two different rooms. In music news, the Best Buy company closed 110 of its music stores this week, several in the New York area. The cutbacks were ascribed to a decline in sales of pre-recorded CDs and cassettes and the rise of online music services. In unrelated news, after 14 turbulent years, Tommy Mottola has stepped down as CEO of Sony Music. He's leaving to start a new music venture, but he remains best known for signing Celine Dion and for discovering and marrying and then divorcing Mariah Carey. When reports surfaced that Mariah Carey and Celine Dion would no longer be releasing as much music, all of the Best Buy stores immediately reopened. In other music news, 500 missing reel-to-reel tapes of the Beatles, circa 1969-1970, have been recovered in the Netherlands. Dutch police are now going through the sonic treasure trove. The haul includes tracks that were going to be on a record the group had planned but never made between the White Album and Let It Be. Some of the songs made it to the latter album, but others were never released and thought to be lost forever when they were stolen. Also recovered were 200 tapes made at the same time by Yoko Ono. Those were given back to the thieves, along with a note requesting that next time they do a better job hiding them. And in further news of the naughty, British rock star Pete Townshend has admitted he paid to view a website that offered child pornography. When news surfaced that a pedophilia sting was investigating an unnamed rock star, Townshend, anticipating an attack, launched his first strike. He issued a public statement pre-defending himself, and he said, quote, "On one occasion, I used a credit card to enter a site advertising child porn. I did this purely to see what was there. I am not a pedophile. I think pedophilia is appalling," he said. "But to fight against pedophilia, you have to know what's out there." Well, I think that's a very reasonable argument. And as I've told my wife many times, it is to protest the belittling and objectification of women that I spend hours and hours on www.lesbonympho.com. And, you know, I think I'm making a difference. In local news, Garden City psychiatrist Dr. Richard Karpf was arrested this week when he tried to buy a semi-automatic handgun with a silencer plus 12 rounds of ammunition. He told the undercover detective who sold him the weapon he intended to kill several people, dismember them, and dump their body parts in the Atlantic Ocean. Asked by a court-appointed psychiatrist why he wanted to commit such mayhem, Dr. Karpf replied, "Why do you think I wanted to commit such mayhem?" The court-appointed shrink answered, "I think this is a question you have to answer for yourself." To which Dr. Karpf replied, "That may be so, but are you sure I'm the one who should be answering that question?" This line of inquiry continued for 49 more minutes, after which both doctors agreed to meet again, same time every week for the next 2 years, and have the exact same conversation. In news of the animal kingdom, a German family has kept a very unusual pet for the last 33 years. In 1969, Hannelore Richter of Western Germany went on a fishing trip and caught an eel. He brought it home to cook for supper, only the children fell in love with it and begged him to spare the eel's life. Well, it's been living in their bathtub ever since. A Berlin zoologist told Reuters that the eel no longer has the skills he'd need to survive in the wild, but he can live in a tub if treated properly. The kids trained it to swim in a bucket when someone needs to take a bath, though for some reason the women in the family prefer having the eel in the bath with them. Mrs. Richter commenting, "Yeah, it's good, but electric eel would be better." And that's the news gone by for January 12th, 2003. Sending your comments, opinions, and bootleg Beagle tapes to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Please, no grenades. I'm already having a blast. If you're a big fan of Dave's Gone By, and I know I am, why not join the Bystanders, the official Dave's Gone By fan club? Because you can receive a bi-monthly newsletter, get a weekly special email, an autographed membership card, eligible for discounts on show merchandise and local businesses, receive a one-hour best-of audio tape, including favorite moments from the show, and maybe even stuff we couldn't put on the radio. All this for just $10. For the newsletter, the discounts, the email, and the collector's item audio tape, it's a great deal. And if you join before March 31st, we'll throw in a signed picture of the host. Just make a $10 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Total Theater, Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also join via PayPal to the email address davesgoneby@aol.com. That's davesgoneby@aol.com.
Let's learn to love and respect each other. Shuby Taylor.
Shoo su su wa, tree da, tra la la wee, wee do saw, tra la la ha, dwee dee bwa, wee dee saw, da ra, la da da shree, lo kum pa, la da da shra, wee dee saw, la da da ra, wee da da saw, pee pa, slido bit, slido to be bit, wee da ra, sa ba da ha, sa ba ra, sa ba ha, ya, wee da sa, ha.
Taylor, the human horn here on Dave's Gone By. It's 8 o'clock exactly. I've spoken about Shuby before, but I'll just give you the quick summary of him. William Shuby Taylor, retired postal worker, and nobody quite knew who he was, but a tape of his had surfaced and floated around and became kind of an underground thing, and then got into the hands of some DJs at radio station WFMU, and they started playing it and learned that every single song, even though he scattered in sort of the same way, each one was somehow special and unique and wonderful and awful at the same time. But they had no idea who this guy was or how to contact him for years and years, and they just thought it was this thing out of the ozone by someone who died like 20 years ago. There had been that rumor. Until a guy doing the Shuby website tracked him down. He went through all the William Taylors in New Jersey and found him in a nursing home just a couple of months ago. They brought him into the radio station. They interviewed him. He's fine. He can't really sing anymore because he had one or two strokes, but he still has that great Shuby joy. And the song Shuby was singing by the way, was Lift Every Voice and Sing, a spiritual by black poet and civil rights leader James Weldon Johnson. He was a school principal in Florida, and in 1900 he was asked to write a speech for a birthday celebration remembering Abraham Lincoln. He got stuck and tried to write a poem instead. He got stuck again, and he asked his composer brother, John Rosamond Johnson, for a hand, and together they composed Lift Every Voice and Sing. Not many white people are familiar with the song, but apparently it is considered the black national anthem. I saw on the internet a website from a woman at Dayton University, and she writes that when she was growing up, she went to a two-room schoolhouse in Muleshoe, Texas. That's not a joke. Muleshoe, Texas. A black woman, and every morning the day would start the same way, with three things: the Lord's Prayer, the National Anthem, and the Negro National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. Now, I doubt they sang it the way Shubby Taylor sings it. Then again, if they did, it might have set back the cause of civil rights 50 years. Well, folks, if you're just tuning in, regular listeners and new listeners, this is Dave's Gone By, an hour of talk radio, music, and comedy. We started a little early this week, 7:30, but we're still running until 9, and we'll be doing that for the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure how long at this point, but we're experimenting, tinkering with the format, so at least temporarily, we're on from 7:30 to 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, a full 90 minutes. So if you like the show, what's wrong with you? No, just kidding. I hope everyone's enjoying it, and if you don't like hearing me chatter, well, some of the extra time is devoted to music. This week, we're celebrating the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and we'll be looking at black poetry later. Also, my colleague, Joe Salzone, has kindly let me broadcast an interview he did with a woman who was very close to Dr. King. Some would say too close. All that and more in this coming hour. But music first. Gotta play some James Brown for the occasion, and it's really tempting to go with, you know, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. It's pretty catchy, and it's got that great couplet where people, we're just like the birds and the bees, we'd rather die on our feet than be living on our knees. But I'm gonna go with an even funkier cut, this from February 1969. Just like Say It Loud, the title on this one says it all. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Pee Wee Ellis, Maceo Parker, Clyde Stubblefield on drums, the gang's all there. James Brown, back before he was a cross between a joke, a tragedy, and an icon, here he was still a soul man, and an inspiring one at that. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Hit it!
Nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. I don't give me integration, give me true communication. I don't give me sorrow, I want equal opportunity to live tomorrow. Give me schools and give me better books so I can read about myself and gain my truer look. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Do you hear me now? Nah, nah. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Some of us try as hard as we can. We don't want no sympathy, we just wanna be a man. Nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. We got towers we can use on our side of town. Just get our heads together and build it up from the ground. When some of us make money, we forget about our people. Forget about a honey. Forget about a honey. Do you know?
The 11-piece Klezmer Conservatory Band on Sunday, January 19th at the Forest Hills Jewish Center on Queens Boulevard in Forest Hills. So give us a call before 9, say the secret word Mushnick, and the seats are yours. Our phone number is 516-955-1240, 516-955-1240.
Stupid. Come on. We don't have time to hate. We need all the time we got. Try to communicate. Come on. Lord, 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 Lord. How can I get myself together when you keep on snatching it back? How can I get myself together when you keep on snatching it back? How can I get myself together when you keep on snatching it back? How can I get myself together when you keep on snatching it back? I don't want nobody giving me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Just get that education. No fall, 'cause we gonna get this thing together, and you got to care the ball. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. Open up.
Every Saturday night at 7:30, right here on WGBB, it's Joe Salzone Live. Tell us about it, Joe.
Well, Dave, it's a half-hour, fast-paced glimpse at the world we live in.
Joe Salzone brings his old-fashioned, conservative views, along with his desire to hear all viewpoints, to the airwaves each week. It's a one-of-a-kind show that you'll hear only on Long Island's news and information leader,
1240 AM WGBB,
the station that serves your community.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. I'm Joe Salzone, a host here at WGBB. My good friend Dave has asked me to sit in for this interview because I'm a little more experienced when it comes to politics. This is a special edition dedicated to celebrating the life of Martin Luther King. It is therefore with some excitement that I present to you our next guest. Her name is Cleola Bevers, and if you've never heard of her, well, that's because she has been rather behind the scenes. She was a member of CORE for about 2 decades, and until recently served as a technical advisor to the news division of Black Entertainment Television. Years ago, she was a secretary in a very liberal New York law office in the early 1960s, one that would take pro bono cases, especially involving civil rights. Well, this brought her down to Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, brought her into the movement, and also into the circle of people behind it, including Martin Luther King. She started as an admirer, later on became his friend, and ultimately, well, his favorite mistress. That's according to her book, at least, Marty and Me, published by Cush City Books, 1997. We have Miss Bevers live in studio. It's an exclusive interview on her book tour you won't hear anywhere else but right here on WGBB. Miss Bevers, welcome to Dave's Gone By. So how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fine. My elbow's hurt and my goiter's acting up, but why complain? I'm 72 years old and I don't feel a day over 60.
Well, that's a wonderful attitude.
Every day I have 2 cigarettes, 2 donuts, 2 shots of rum, and 2 orgasms.
Wait a minute, 2 what?
Orgasms. That's when you feel good all over, till you look at the piece of crap lying next to you, then you feel lousy all over again. Men's.
Well, I guess the most pressing question for most of our listeners would be, where did you first run into Dr. King, and how did it all come about?
I first met Martin Luther King when he was in Selma.
Selma, Alabama?
No, Selma Johnson. She was a bookkeeper at Ebenezer Church, and there was what you would call an item. I walked in on him one day. They called it a strategy session for a march, but the only thing they was marching toward that day was an orgasm.
But wasn't he married to Coretta at that point?
Well, of course. But you know how their men's are. The angels in the pulpit and devils in the bedroom. But I ain't pointing no fingers. I was married, too.
Really? Now, what was your husband?
Oh, he was a good man. He died about 5 years ago. That's why I could write the book.
Now, he never knew you and Dr. King.
Well, he knew I worked for Dr. King. He knew we was friends. But he didn't know that I'd been to the mountaintop, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, that's been a very controversial point. When stories of King's infidelity began to surface, any racist looking to run him down finally had something to point at. You know, he was an adulterer. He may have been a good speaker, but what kind of example was he setting morally?
Orally? Oh, he was wonderful orally. He had this great trick he used to do with his mustache.
No, Miss Beavers. Morally, as in righteousness.
Ooh, well, he was a righteous man. What he said he believed, he believed. And he put himself in harm's way time and time again.
Now, I know he was stabbed once and then assaulted and then finally assassinated by James Earl Ray, as we all know. Were you ever there for any of the violence he had to endure?
Well, there was one time Edna O'Malley attacked him with a greasy spatula.
Edna O'Malley, another mistress?
Oh, yes. White girl, too.
Wow.
He felt guilty about that, but he said, if I gotta start sleeping with the enemy, I might as well get me one with long legs and big bazongas.
Now, with all due respect, Miss Bevers, did Martin Luther King really say bazongas?
No, he said something else, but I cleaned it up for the radio.
Well, thank you, but why did she, Edna O'Malley, why did she attack him with a spatula?
Because she couldn't find the rolling pin, that's why.
No, I mean, what was she angry about?
Oh, she was jealous. He liked the white women's, but he was always saying how he preferred the black princesses. We got more meat on us. We move better. We got style. We got some ancient juju that turned him on.
And this woman felt threatened by that?
Oh, yeah. Plus, he gave her the hype.
Wait a second. Martin Luther King had herpes?
Oh, yeah. We all did. Weren't no big deal. It was the 60s. Let me tell you. Back then, the NAACP had more crabs than a Baltimore fish fry.
Now, were you envious of Dr. King's relationships with other women, including his wife, Coretta Scott King? You have to excuse me here, ma'am.
Okay.
Or was he just part of what comes with, you know, dating a powerful man?
I knew I could never have this man all to myself. Remember, I was married also. So we made the best of the times we had. If we was in a restaurant, we'd play footsie under the table. If we was in some governor's office, we'd sneak off to the closet and feed each other up. I remember Marty once telling me he wanted us to wait until midnight, strip naked, and dive into the reflecting pool at the Washington Monument. Give President Johnson a free show.
He didn't say that.
Oh, yes. I even said, next time you talk to the president, ask if he wants to do a threesome.
Whoa, you? Martin Luther King and Lyndon Johnson?
Well, it never happened. Marty chickened out. But I tell you, it would have been the best thing for this country. That president be so uptight about the war, he just needed to loosen up. If we'd have done 69 and 69, we'd have been out of Vietnam by 70.
Well, with all due respect, I don't think...
I told Marty, I said, just let me at Lyndon Johnson. I put the BJ back in LBJ.
All right. It sounds like you had a pretty close physical relationship with Dr. King. Was that all it was about?
Well, no. We spent most of our time planning boycotts, setting up interviews, writing speeches.
Did you ever help him with that? The famous I Have a Dream speech, or the one he delivered in Memphis the day before he was assassinated?
Well, no, not directly. But I think I inspire him. For example, I once bought him a ring to wear, just a little token for when we was together. And when we was apart, he'd remember the ring and think of me. We called it the Freedom Ring.
Oh, I get it. That whole finale of the I Have a Dream speech, Let Freedom Ring.
Well, I'm not saying it was so direct, but he was wearing it when he said it.
Now, wait a minute. I've seen footage of that speech, and the only ring on his hands was the wedding band at Coretta.
Well, he wasn't wearing it on his hands. Wasn't that kind of ring. You see, it fits over the head.
All right. Now, if we can step away from your personal relationship with him for a moment into a large social view, I think it's universally accepted now that Martin Luther King was a great spiritual leader. But there are those who say his words of peace wouldn't have carried much weight without the threat of force to back it up, be it Malcolm X or the Black Panthers. Do you think that King's influence has been overemphasized because the media wants its heroes to be peaceful and not rock the boat? Or is it impossible to overestimate what he's meant to the lives of millions of people, black and white, in America?
A man like that comes along once in everybody's lifetime. When you desire black peace, you think of Martin. And I'm proud to say that when Martin desired a black peace, he thought of me.
Well, certainly a new and intimate perspective on this great man. Cleola Bever's book, Marty and Me, now in paperback.
So you can read it at the beach. Kind of how Cleola got her groove back.
Oh, Cleola Bevis, thank you so much for being our guest tonight and for shedding new light and, I guess, old clothing on Dr. King.
You're very welcome. Nighty night.
Love.
If you've listened to this show the past few weeks, you know we have something of a poetic bent now and again. We've talked about Joyce Kilmer, Carl Sandburg. Now, in honor of Martin Luther King Day, it's only fair to compare and contrast some of the black poetry from a few years ago to some of the more celebrated current African-American writers. For example, Langston Hughes, novelist, poet, and playwright, who wanted to reflect black culture in his work. One short poem by Hughes is titled Justice. That justice is a blind goddess is a thing to which we black are wise. Her bandage hides two festering sores that once, perhaps, were eyes. Or this one. I, too, sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I, too, am America. Langston Hughes from 1925. 78 years later, we encountered John Taylor, one of the men who massacred two people at a Wendy's restaurant in Queens. He also ordered his mildly retarded accomplice to shoot five other people, which he did. Here's an excerpt from a poem John Taylor penned after hearing his name on television in connection with the murders. Like Tennessee Williams scribbling on a shoebox, Taylor wrote his magnum opus on the Rikers Island orientation form. He had done time at Rikers back in 1999 for a string of fast food store robberies. Anyway, hear the lyricism, the soul, the poetry, in the words of John Taylor. I looked for help, but all I found, my whole world crashing down but me, to recover what all I lost. I had to sell some crack, weed, and even kill my boss. Now I'm the king with the crown. They got my face on the world's most wanted show, on Channel 5, showing live. You'll think I'm famous, I'm airing worldwide. I'm a stick-up kid, so swift, you see, in and out, like 1, 2, 3. I said, give me the dough, spelled D-O-E, by the way. I said, give me the dough. You say, no? No? Is it no, you said? Stick some lead to your head. Guess what, punk? Now you're dead, with all that blood bursting out your head. From head to toe, if you wanna know, I gotta go. That's why they got me on the world's most wanted show. Well, that's just inspiring, isn't it? It has the modern rhythms of rap, yet the simple poetic structure of nursery rhymes. Plus, it doesn't go in for those old-fashioned, corny poetic values like hope, morality, optimism, or personal responsibility. But let's not be hasty in dismissing the past. For a more contemporary comparison, let's look at Nikki Giovanni, best known for her works in the 1960s and 70s, and playwright and versifier Amiri Baraka, a.k.a. Leroy Jones, who's still very active in the poetry circuit. Here's an autobiographical poem from Nikki Giovanni called Nikki Rosa. Childhood remembrances are always a drag if you're black. You always remember things like living in Woodlawn with no inside toilet, and if you become famous or something, they never talk about how happy you were to have your mother all to yourself, and how good the water felt when you got your bath from one of those big tubs that folk in Chicago barbecue in. And somehow, when you talk about home, it never gets across how much you understood their feelings, as the whole family attended meetings about Hollydale,
And even though you remember, your biographers never understand your father's pain as he sells his stock and another dream goes. And though you're poor, it isn't poverty that concerns you. And though they've fought a lot, it isn't your father's drinking that makes any difference, but only that everybody is together, and you and your sister have happy birthdays and very good Christmases. And I really hope no white person ever has cause to write about me, because they never understand. Black love is black wealth. And they'll probably talk about my hard childhood and never understand that all the while I was quite happy. That's Nikki Rosa from black poet Nikki Giovanni. By contrast, here's an excerpt from an almost brand new poem from poet laureate Amiri Baraka, written shortly after 9/11. Somebody blew up America. They say it's some terrorist, some barbaric Arab in Afghanistan. It wasn't our American terrorists. It wasn't the Klan or the skinheads or the them that blows up nigger churches or reincarnates us on death row. They say, who say? Who do the saying? Who say they God and still be the devil? Who do Jesus resemble? Who define art? Who define science? Who made the bombs? Who made the guns? Who stole Puerto Rico? Who stole the Indies, the Philippines, Manhattan, Australia, and the Hebrides? Who forced opium on the Chinese? Who owned the slave ship? Who run the army? Who the fake president? Who the ruler? Who the banker? Who owned the oil? Who do no toil? Who owned the soil? Who is not a nigger? Who is so great ain't nobody bigger? Who owned this city? Who owned the air? Who owned the water? Who found Bin Laden? Maybe they Satan. Who paid the CIA? Who knew the bomb was gonna blow? Who know why the terrorists learned to fly in Florida, San Diego? Who know why 5 Israelis was filming the explosion and cracking their sides at the notion? Who put the Jews in ovens? And who helped them do it? Who said America first and okayed the yellow stars? Who cut off people's hands in the Congo? Who invented AIDS? Who put the germs in the Indians' blankets? Who do Tom ass Clarence work for? Who doo-doo come out the colon's mouth? Who know what kind of skeezer is a Condoleezza? Who overthrew Nkrumah? Who framed the Rosenbergs, Garvey, the Scottsboro Boys, the Hollywood Ten? Who set the Reichstag fire? Who knew the World Trade Center was going to get bombed? Who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? Who? Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. Like the acid vomit of the fire of hell. Who and who and who and who? Exploding owl indeed. Well, he does have a lot of righteous anger and a way with making verbal connections. And he kind of had me till the Israel stuff. Somebody Blew Up America is, if you haven't guessed, the controversial poem that got the Anti-Defamation League up in arms, saying it was anti-Semitic. Well, it's kind of anti-everything. It's certainly anti-Israel and anti-Zionist, though I think Baraka took specific pains to use the word Israel when he's being negative, and he only uses the word Jews or Jewish names when he sees Jews as victims. It's Israelis who ducked the 9/11 bombing, but poor Jews who got stuffed in ovens. So I really believe that he doesn't believe he's being anti-Semitic. Baraka sees Jews being as much a victim of the white establishment corporate power elite as all the other minorities are, which is all right. Except, you know, we're trying to move past the whole victim thing. And what Baraka doesn't understand is that it's not so easy to separate Jews from Israel. A particular person or party in the Israeli government may be. But Israel itself is a Jewish state. It's not like Miami, someone else's homeland, where Jews happen to live because there's a 4 o'clock buffet. So yes, I do take offense to the idea that somehow 4,000 Israelis knew to stay home on September 11th, that they didn't come into Lower Manhattan because they knew something was up. This, according to Baraka, while 5 other Israelis were somewhere with their camcorders shooting videotapes of the Twin Towers coming down and giggling about it. I don't know. Judging by the number of Jewish names in the roll call of the Twin Towers dead, I wonder how come they never got the word. You know, maybe a few of the rabbis' cell phones weren't working. Either that or, you know how Jews are. You tell them to get to the office at 8:45, they show up 9:15, 9:20... By the time Yids got to Vasey Street that day, downtown was already closed. So they all went to a Chinese restaurant and counted all the ways bombing the World Trade Center benefited Israel. Yeah, right. And I'm sure they'll be doing just that when the first Iraqi Scuds hit Tel Aviv. Now, if we can get 4,000 Israeli workers to stay home that day, it'll be a new Jewish holiday for sure. And speaking of holidays, getting back to MLK, here's another angry poem, also controversial, this one with music, and with a 6 degrees of anti-Semitism connection. It was written during the decision-making process of whether to make Martin Luther King Day a national holiday. Most of the states went for it immediately. Utah and New Hampshire wanted to make it a more generalized human rights day, but they jumped on board eventually. Arizona just wasn't joining the party until they were threatened by a tourist boycott. I can't fathom why they wouldn't have wanted a national holiday. I mean, go up to someone and say, excuse me, sir, would you like a day off from work? The reply is not going to be, well, this isn't for some civil rights leader, is it? No, they're going to say, King Schming, if we add Malcolm X and Stokely Carmichael, can we push it to a 4-day weekend? Hell, for a whole week off, you can add Louis Farrakhan and the Sniper Guy. But this really was a controversy, and the rap group Public Enemy responded with By the Time I Get to Arizona, a song that added to the Arizona heat, but it was the video that put the heat on Public Enemy. They reenacted King's assassination and portrayed the governor of the state as a David Duke-style politician just a sheet away from the Klan. Then they showed him and some other politicos being mock assassinated, which immediately threw the white media into a panic. And Public Enemy had already scared a lot of people because of their paramilitary clothing, their anger, their distrust of the police, and the powers that be. And then came Professor Griff, the Trent Lott of the group, who said some stupid things about Jews, which the media couldn't ignore given the occasional covertly anti-Semitic lyric in Public Enemy songs, including their masterpiece Welcome to the Terror Dome. It all contributed at the time, and from a narrow perspective, to a feeling that these guys were a call to arms, which they were, only a metaphorical one. And mercifully, there's no veiled anti-Jewish anything in By the Time I Get to Arizona, just some good old-fashioned white cracker bashing in what some have called Public Enemy's last great musical statement. It's from their 1991 album, Apocalypse 91, The Enemy Strikes Black. Here's Chuck D and the gang, By the Time I Get to Arizona.
By the time I get to Arizona. I pray. I pray every day, I do every shot I make. Looking for closer, I got my knife here for Jamaica. Pushing and shaking the structure, bringing down a Babylon. Here in the structure, I make it hard for the brown. The heart full of blood, I need it now, more than ever now. Who's sitting on my freedom oppressor? People beater, a piece of the pick. We picked a piece of the land we're serving now. Reparation, a piece of the nation, damn, we got the nerve. Another nigga, they say it classified, we want too much. My people plus the nine is mine, don't think I even doubled up. Here's the problem, my attitude is here, I'm hanging up high. I'm blowing up the 90s, started ticking in 86. When the pine get a mind, better start fearing while we singing now. There will be the day we know who's down and who will go, 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 go. By the time I get to Arizona,
hi folks, Dave Lefkowitz here from Dave's Gone By, and I want to tell you about a product, event, or service. I'm going to talk about it for half a minute or a minute. I'm going to make it really interesting, and all my listeners are going to go, hey, maybe I'll try this product, event, or service. It's called advertising or sponsorship, and it's easy, cost-effective, and just plain effective. To get your person, place, or thing, well, not thing, promoted on Dave's Gone By and reach listeners all over Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, and the tri-state area, just give us a call at 516-295-1511 or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and see sponsorship opportunities, ad rates, and more. Again, the number, 516-295-1511. Insert your product, event, or service here. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 8:41 and time for Dave Goes Off. No, not off the air. That's still about 20 minutes away. This is just where I extemporaneousize myself and go off book, go off script, and rant about things kind of Dennis Miller light-ish style. And a couple of things that have just been on my mind. And one of them is, since we're doing this whole thing about the Martin Luther King Day holiday, I have a problem with putting holidays on the wrong days. Now, Martin Luther King was born on January 15th, but we celebrate the holiday on January 20th, a Monday. Why? Because it's not so much about the holiday, it's about having a three-day weekend. Now, I more than anybody appreciate the idea of stringing three free pleasant days together where you don't have to worry about work, where if you go away you can plan something to leave like late on a Thursday and come back late Sunday night. All that kind of stuff is great. But Martin Luther King's birthday is a birthday. And even Christmas, which is supposedly December 25th, is when Christ was born. But so many biblical scholars say that that actual date of his birth could have been March 28th, April 2nd, November 18th. They've actually figured out 8 different days over 6 different months, church leaders were arguing, could have been Christ's birthday. But December 25th was chosen by the Romans in the 4th or 5th century. Why? To coincide with the pagan festival of Mithra, the sun god, so that, you know, they could have a festival too. And that just happened to coincide with the solstice and all that. Now, if anything, Christmas is the holiday that should most coincide with a 3 or 4 day weekend, rather than plopping it into the middle of the week, because families fly around the country to get together. Who wants to do that, you know, from a Tuesday through a Thursday and then go back to work? Doesn't make sense. Well, and I should add that a friend of mine worked at the airlines, and he got his birthday off. It's that day. And in my last job, when I started having a fairly flexible schedule there, I would take off my birthday, January 23rd. So, you know, otherwise, why shouldn't we just all have our birthdays in the middle of June? Take the longest day of the year, you know, the nicest, weather's fine, go to the beach, do something cool. But again, it all defeats the purpose, so let's put our holidays back on the days where they belong. And if you want to make up a special holiday called 3-Day Weekend Day, I'm all for that, too. Okay, moving on to the NFL. And again, pursuant to some of our themes today, the January 4th playoff game between the Jets and the Indianapolis Colts was the first time in NFL history that both teams in a playoff game had black coaches. Now, the Jets won that game 41-0, and they had the brilliant, inscrutable, dynamic, forward-thinking Herman Edwards. The Colts, who lost 41-0, had some schwatz. I don't know. No, I'm kidding. Tony Dungy was the other coach. He was once Edwards' supervisor, and the two have been good friends for many years. The bad news is that they're still the only black coaches in the NFL. Why is there this color barrier at the top? Well, it was the lag between what's going on in the field and in the main office. And I still say all that, even though I think the Jets were losing when I went on the air. I don't know if they won or lost at this point. I'm sorry, I don't have that information. But again, going back to blacks in sports, that brings us to Tiger Woods, who isn't black per se. I'm not even sure he thinks of himself as being African American. In fact, he's described himself with his own word as Cabalasian. And, you know, what good is sitting alone in your room if you can come to the Cabalasian? But his mom's Asian, his dad's black, and apart from Jumbo Ozaki, it's not as if you see a zillion Japanese or Koreans at the 18th hole on television. But so Tiger Woods' I'm just a golfer shtick is great in one way. It says there shouldn't be a race involved at all. It's just I am who I am and I play great golf. But it's also kind of tough when he has the name and the fame to be the biggest spokesman for his generation, or his half-generation, since Muhammad Ali. You know, there are still country clubs where blacks, and I'm sure Jews, aren't welcome. So should Tiger have stood up for women to play at Augusta National Country Club, home of the Masters? Well, okay, I mean, if he should have stood up and said, no, I won't play there, all the other white golfers should have had been asked to do that too, and they should have done that too. It shouldn't have to all fall on his shoulders. You know, a tournament can live without Tiger Woods, but it can't live without the 100 other players on the circuit. I do have some mixed feelings about this. There is something to be said for a boys' club atmosphere every once in a while. Everybody doesn't have to include everyone else in everything every time. There can be just things for men and just things for women. So my solution for the Augusta National is to divide the week. Let men play on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, only men. Women can have the course Tuesdays and Thursdays. And the weekends, everybody plays together. Now that still gives men the edge, not just for tradition's sake, but because I still think a heck of a lot more men play golf than women. But if you really want to be fair, okay, you can alternate weeks. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, first men, then the next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, women, like the garbage men do it. It gives both sexes a chance to cut loose with their own kind, and it also acknowledges that this is the 21st century, and 49% of the population can no longer rule 51% of the population. Darn. Anyway, that's my opinion. I want to hear yours, so email me at davesgoneby@aol.com, or you can write to me the old-fashioned 19th century way, Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. If you missed all that, just go to the website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, and the contact info is all there, too. Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Keeps rolling. He keeps on. potato. He don't want cotton. I got carried away. I got carried away. I think I was doing a live show. I'm sorry. I apologize. I lost my head.
The late, occasionally great Screamin' Jay Hawkins deconstructing Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein II with Old Man River. That's from his 1991 Rhino disc, Black Music for White People, which is kind of the theme of today's show, isn't it? For a playlist for this and previous episodes of Dave's Gone By, check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. We keep adding great stuff to the site, photos, archival info, plus something very special this week. We've been given two more pair of tickets, first come, first served, to the Klezmer Conservatory Band, playing Sunday, January 19th at Forest Hills Jewish Center. My God, the whole audience is going to be filled with Dave's Gone By listeners, but to get the tickets, don't call the station, don't call the show, show's over in a couple of minutes. This is at the Dave's Gone By website only. And now there's a catch. You have to be a member of or join the Bystanders Club. If you're already a member, just check your email for details. If you want to join the club, it's only $10, and you get all the cool club stuff. A bi-monthly newsletter, a weekly email, the best of audio tape, and opportunities for other discounts and free items. And the first two new or current club members who email will get tickets to the January 19th Klezmer concert in Forest Hills. All the details are at hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. If you forget the URL, just Google search for Dave's Gone By and we're right up top. Also, if you don't win the tickets, but you still want to see the concert, call Ticketmaster at 212-307-7171. That's 307-7171. An appropriately sad number there, actually called MLK. Also appropriately sad because engineer Paul tells me the Jets lost to Oakland 30-10. Oh, well, it was a fun dream while it lasted. Time to begin my thank yous. Thank you again, Jonathan Slaff. Thanks to station manager Joey, engineer Paul again. Welcome back, engineer Joe, also a great sport. Listen to his show, Joe Salzone Live, Saturday nights at 7:30. Also, Saturday nights, 5:30 to 6:30, don't miss Don Lewis hosting Entertainment Long Island about how to be a performer. Thank you to my wife and dog-watching partner, Joyce. Thanks again to Dr. Zimitz and all the folks at Oceanside Vet. Happy birthday, Tanya Arkhangelskaya Rogalitz, and Mnogo, Mnogo more. Time to swing low this sweet edition of Dave's Gone By, our 15th show to be young, gifted, and Dave. Hope you've enjoyed it. I thought it went great, and I know I'm biased, but still. Please send your comments, suggestions, and hair relaxers to davesgoneby@aol.com. See you next week, 7:30, Sunday nights. Don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Good real holiday. And gone by.